Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Brady Arts District will welcome a new visual arts space tonight as 108 Contemporary marks its official debut at its new home at 108 East Brady in the renovated Matthews Building. Formerly the Brady Craft Alliance, 108 Contemporary opens its first exhibit in its new home with the work of internationally known contemporary fiber artist John Eric Reese, who's my guest today. Reese has exhibited his hand-woven tapestries around the U.S. and throughout Europe and Asia. His work can be found in the collections of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Art Institute of Chicago, the New York Museum of Art and Design, the Renwick Gallery, and a host of other major regional museums. In 2011, Reese was named a USA Wingate Fellow, which encompasses all forms of artistic expression and the highest renderers of those art forms. Reese's work is inspired by the textiles of pre-Columbian Peru, Imperial China, and Tibet, and creates work that is beautiful yet full of social comment. His forms include a cloak-like coat that he creates with metallic thread, silk beads, and semi-precious stones, with socio-political comment on the hidden and equally detailed interior of the piece. It's beautifully created fiber work, and you can see it on display at 108 Contemporary. The Tapestries of John Eric Reese opens tonight in time for the Brady Art Crawl and will be on display through April 21st. John Eric Reese joins me today on Studio Tulsa. John Eric Reese, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Your work is so beautiful, and you're doing this ancient art form, tapestry. Tapestries, you know, they last thousands of years. What got you interested in doing tapestry in the first place?
Well, one influence was definitely grandparents coming over from Sweden and Norway. Both my grandmothers had interest and wove their own fabrics and ended up with a number of their weaving implements. When they came over, they brought hackles and spinning wheel and things like this. So that certainly influenced me. And then growing up in the Chicago area, we had the Field Museum of Natural History, and I spent hours there looking over their collections as a kid. And when I went to the Art Institute in Chicago, I thought I would follow in my, again, uncle and grandfather's profession of being a commercial artist. Started out that way and then took an introductory course in textiles that was mandatory for all the freshman students. And it was 6 weeks of doing work in fiber, and I just really, that did it. Really enjoyed that work, and for 40-some years I've been following that that movement here.
And really, you've seen during those 40 years the blossoming of this art form again, once again, in America, because I can't imagine that people were saying, oh, yeah, tapestry, that's a good route for you.
Well, you can say that again. I think my family was really, they always said follow your heart, which was good, but they were always concerned, what is he going to do when he gets out of school? But I ended up teaching for a number of years. And then after 6 years, I decided to open up my own tapestry business where I was doing commercial commission work for banks and hotels really all over the world. And by 1990, things really slowed down, and I decided to stop doing this commission work and just plunk in and do my own statements. And that's what I've been doing ever since, just my own work, non-commissioned.
The work is very powerful. It has a great sense of humor. It also has a great sense of political statement at times. And one thing you see when you see a body of your work is you have a fascination with feathers.
Oh, I do. And again, that comes from looking at ancient textiles, especially from Peru, their feather ponchos. That's where it all started, I'm sure.
Well, you know, that change from commercial work to doing your own personal artwork, that had to be a big change in your life.
Well, it certainly was, because for many years, I had a number of weavers working with me. You know, some pieces were 20 by 50 feet in scale, and I had a full-fledged business going. I had trained a number of students, mostly from Cambodia, believe it or not, and we were weaving away for about 10 years, and then I went on to China to work as an art director for a big project in Shanghai. and I was gone for a year and a half. And in that period of time, my studio just fell apart. And when I got back home to the States and to my studio again, I had no commission work, and I had to let everyone go and decide, what am I going to do for a living? And I had a large collection of textiles I had always been collecting, and decided to become a dealer, and at that same time, just do my own work. And that's how it all got started.
Now, you mentioned a trip to China. Obviously, that trip did have a big influence, because a big part of your artwork now is, your artwork is expressed on these tapestries, which are in the form of Chinese textiles, and especially the uniforms of the courtiers and of the court of the Qing dynasty.
Qing dynasty, that's correct.
From about 1600 to early 1900s. Of the court outfits and the costumes and clothing of the court.
That's right. And then utilizing, semi-precious material, such as pearls and embellishing my textiles, it all stems from the Chinese textiles, and just looking at various costumes from around the world. It's also Russian court textiles were important. And having the opportunity to travel to China back and forth, and going to Tibet, studying, again, collecting textiles and looking at embellished works, really plays a big part in my life. Still does today.
And how did you come upon using the Chinese jacket as a way of expressing? Because we should mention to listeners, that, since they can't see this yet, a lot of your work in recent years has focused on these jackets, whether it's Peruvian or Chinese, and what you have is a design on the outside of the jacket. When you open the jacket, there will be another message. What I'm looking at now are two pieces that are in the Atlanta High Museum and the Indianapolis Museum of Art, and they're two very profound war statements, one called Freedom's Price and the other Greed, and they feature camo designs on the outside, and then when you open them up, you see sort of a homemade sampler of Home Sweet Home on one, with these blood images on the inside. The other features a $100 bill encased in gold, again with the blood design. So these obviously were important forms to you. How did you come upon that?
Well, I had always detested camouflage fabric. I never liked it, and I thought, hey, maybe I should really delve into this and try to make the most elegant camouflage fabric I can. And that's how this started. And taking that very simple universal coat form derived from China as well as the West, without embellishments or buttons or things of this nature, just a very simple form, gave me the opportunity to make a statement on the outside of the coat, and then the surprise aspect when you open up the coat, much like a book, you're not sure what you're going to find on the interior. And that was still an inspiration today. My first series of these coats dealt with a human body, this precious skin, where I did a number of coats in gold, metallic thread. And then when you open this up, you have your organs, rib cage, heart, liver, things of this order on the interior.
Right. In fact, on the outside, there'll actually be like men's and women's breasts. And then
that's
when you open
correct.
Them up, yeah, yeah.
The idea is a second skin.
Right.
Making it very precious. And then also sometimes embellishing these things with pearls and crystal beads.
And that is some of the interesting, the beadwork on some of these jackets are just so beautiful. There's a sort of a natural series, and I can't remember the actual images, but there's one like with the show, the life stages of a moth, it appears to me, because it looks like there's a caterpillar and there's a larvae, and then there are moths flying off, and then other ones with the, frogs. Design, but the beadwork, even looking at a picture, which doesn't really do it justice, the beadwork is just incredible.
Well, in that case, the beadwork are all freshwater pearls, and along with the pearls, you also find coral beads in some of these coats. But these are certainly non-wearable. They weigh around 40 pounds. And when you're doing this pearl work on these coats, you have an interior area that's not visible where it's leather. So you're actually weaving one textile for the exterior of the coat, one for the interior, and then there's a substructure in between, which is leather, because when you have 40 pounds of beads, pearls on it, something, it's just going to tear apart. So you need something very durable and sturdy to hold all this weight together.
Well, it's an impressive-looking coat. And there seems to be a great sense of whimsy in your designs. I mean, over the past 10 or 15 years, I can see everything from a lot of interest in classical themes. There's a great open tapestry of different versions of Michelangelo's David, which you've added beards, tattoos, just about everything to this classical image. And so the classics are a big part of it. And one of your big series in the last 10 years or so has been the Icarus series.
Right. I did three in that particular series, Icarus contemplating flight, Icarus in flight, and then Icarus falling to the earth. And again, the use of feathers played a big part in this. These are individual feathers that are tapestry woven and then applied to the actual flat tapestry of Icarus. And in some cases, beadwork again. And that was a series I did when I had an exhibition at the Textile Museum in Washington a number of years ago. And I remember there was a big hullabaloo because they blew up one of the last in the series of Icarus with Icarus falling to the earth. And this was a nude male. And they were concerned because they were using this image in the underground, their railway system around D.C. for an advertisement, and they were a little concerned what people might say about this nude figure in the Washington area like that. But it gave the show much more controversy, and people wanted to see the work. So I think all in all, that really helped.
What was the inspiration for using this classical legend of Icarus?
Oh, I'll tell you, because I had done a whole series of pieces that were influenced by various sculptures, as you mentioned before, David series, and then I did the Three Graces, and then I looked through Canova's work, a French artist in the late 17th, 18th century, and saw the statue of Icarus, and I thought, wow, this would be a good starting point, and here I decided to do it in full color, very realistic, and that's what happened. Got very enthusiastic about that, and I'm going back to these figures with feathers right now. So give me a year's time and I'll have a new collection of work.
And I want to say how realistic it looks, because when you see reproductions of these tapestries, at first glance, it looks like you're looking at a painting.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, that's really impressive.
Well, and it was so time laborious getting these done. Believe me, this took a couple of years of my life to get these finished. The series I'm doing now won't be as complicated as far as photographic look. It's going to be a little bit simpler in form.
And when we say tapestries, I mean, these really are tapestries. This is Icarus 1 is about almost 6 foot by almost 5 foot. The Icarus 2, which is this mirror image of Icarus in flight with the sun at the, which is just an incredibly gorgeous image. It's got to be 5 foot by over 12 feet long.
Yeah, about 13 feet. And that piece is in the exhibition. So yeah. It's going to be nice to revisit that again.
Yeah, obviously you're moving on to new things all the time. I have to ask about another image that is using a coat design, but this is a very different coat design. It's actually a Peruvian design, and it's called Congressional Constraint.
That's correct, uh-huh.
Yeah, this has these images of obviously donkeys and elephants. In fact, there are a few elephants and donkeys that have become one, sort of a push-me-pull-you image. In this Peruvian style, I guess there are little hang-downs off the jacket, and you put boxing gloves at the
end of every... I wish one could have seen the inspiration for this particular piece, because it was based on a 14th century textile at the Textile Museum in Washington, and 10 various fiber artists were asked to produce a work from one of their favorite pieces at the museum. And about 25 years earlier, I had gone through their collection and was influenced by another Peruvian textile, and it was just a very nice experience to go back and be involved again. But in this case, I took this particular format, changed it into a
straight jacket
form,
yeah.
and then put in the Democratic donkey and the Republican image with the elephant, and put them at odds with each other, and try to make a statement that they were not going to work together, and that was certainly the case. And then the bottom fringe are all of these boxing gloves. So I followed the general format of the original Peruvian piece, but certainly updated it to our situation in Washington, D.C., and that's where this textile was shown for 6 months.
What was the reaction?
I mean, it was a good reaction.
Probably a lot of people laughed because they knew it was true.
I think they did. We just see the outcome here, so I'm going to continue with this political aspect, too, as long as I can keep weaving.
And you mentioned this Peruvian form that you changed into a straitjacket. Actually, there are images of straitjacketed elephants and donkeys also as a part of this piece, so it is a powerful political statement as well. My guest today is John Eric Reese. He's a tapestry artist based out of Georgia. His work is in part of many, many important collections, the Art Institute of Chicago, the Met as well. Tapestries of John Eric Reese is the inaugural exhibition at 108 Contemporary, which is formerly the Brady Craft Alliance. This is the first exhibition in their new space at 108 East Brady, and he is our guest today on Studio Tulsa. You took a trip to Tibet a few years ago, and that had a whole body of work that came out of that trip, I think, and obviously it made a great impression.
Made a big impression on me. I'm not sure about the general public. Maybe a little bit too esoteric, but I did a whole series of ceremonial vestments, imagining that I was commissioned by the Dalai Lama to do this collection for him. And I took traditional Tibetan images and wove these into priest's robes. And unfortunately, none of these are in the exhibition here in Tulsa. And then I did a number of other smaller textiles, all based on different images.
Do we have any tiger images in the exhibition?
We have quite a number.
That comes from that Tibetan thing, doesn't it? Because isn't that a sort of the Tibetan view of the tiger, the sort of stylized view of the tiger? Or is that come
from? That's right. In many of the monasteries that one visited, there are frescoes of various tiger forms, and I photographed a number of these from various small cities I had gone to, and wove a whole series of coats that were in contrasting coloration on the exterior, and then on the interior you have a red background, which is the color of the monastery wall situation, with various tiger forms, and got that out of my system. When you look at the exterior of each coat, you have complementary colors for the stripes and for the background of each coat, and they're quite vivid in color. And these are colors that you find in Tibet, especially in their textile production.
Is that colors you've worked with? Because they do have this incredibly vivid color.
And they're also done in fine metallic thread, so they have this look from a distance of beadwork. Many mm-hmm. people don't know, even realize that they're hand-woven. They think they're beaded, but they are tapestry-woven. And my threads come from Japan that are utilized in the obi industry, these sashes that the Japanese weave that go along with their kimonos.
I want to talk about some of your more recent work. You've gone back to tapestry, and I don't want to call it a bug series, but that's sort of what it is. You've been
doing
these
are
locusts
are all
and caterpillars. And
that's right. Well, the locust series, I did four, and they have such incredible, beautiful patterning that I wanted to utilize that as a form of embellishment over these patterned areas with semi-precious stones and Swarovski crystal beads. And then these four panels, two panels are done in white natural freshwater pearls, and the other two panels are done with black freshwater pearls. And I just wanted to do something that dealing with nature, and they are also quite heavy. They weigh around 40 pounds
wow.
each and are rectangular in format.
You know, one of the things about being a weaver of sort is just the amount of man hours involved in creating a piece. something that's 4 or 5 feet or like Icarus thing. I can imagine it took months, maybe even a year or more to do.
It certainly did, and I'm fortunate right now. I have two ladies that I've trained that are both from Colombia, and they're excellent at doing beadwork now and just generally helping in the studio. One person just can't do all this work alone.
Yeah, I would just think it's almost a workshop atmosphere. I mean, the designs are yours, the imagery is yours, but you have to have assistance to be able to actually carry out the execution of it.
Oh, you do, and warping the loom takes a while. There's just a lot to it that, most individuals don't realize. Even drawing up the cartoon takes a number of weeks. So it's an involved process, but I certainly enjoy doing this.
My guest today is John Eric Reese. He's a tapestry artist, and his work is on display in the inaugural exhibition at 108 Contemporary. It's known as formerly the Brady Craft Alliance. They have a brand new space at 108 East Brady, hence the name change. And it's going to be devoted to contemporary arts, but especially fiber and crafts. And the first exhibit features John Eric Reese's work, which is really, really, really amazing. What are some of the things you're working on these days?
Oh, when I go back home, I'm doing a whole series of portraits from various cultures, be it Caucasian, Black, Asian, and I'm doing this whole ancestral theme of these little portraits that are going to be embellished in frames and then applied to another type of textile showing family trees.
How interesting.
A little different aspect here.
But
I'm doing two of these panels.
What was the inspiration?
I've done a lot of work in the past dealing with portraiture, and I thought, I'll get this out of my system, and I think I have now. I've done about 100 of these little images that are about 8 inches and by 4 inches, and it's almost done.
Yeah.
So you'll have to come visit Atlanta.
You mentioned a couple times getting things out of your system. Does the sheer repetition of, the stitch work and everything involved in tapestry making?
Well, I go through cycles. I was, again, doing feather work for a little while, and now you get more ideas. You have a lot of time to think when you're weaving. And I go back and revisit themes again that I was involved with, and I thought, I'll never go back, but I do. So that's kind of a constant. I say out of my system, but I guess it never really disappears.
Now, is the anatomy tape tapestry, is this in the exhibit?
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
Now, this is a really, really amazing work because it's actually a tape tapestry. It's sections of tape of what apparently is obvious but not obvious, that it is a internal anatomy picture that you've done.
It's much like taking a potato peeler and starting at the top of your head and just making a 1-inch strip all the way down to your feet from your body. And I've done tapes where I did the exterior of your body corresponding to the interior of your body on one tape. So one side, if you start with your head, might have hair on the outside, and then on the interior you have your brain matter, eyes. So a whole series of things like this. And I did these tapes, and I thought, I'll try putting these together to form a larger textile rather than these thin 1-inch bands of various motifs.
And it's really interesting that it comes through, even though it, at first glance it looks abstract, and then you all of a sudden...
Right, as you get real close...
You recognize...
A toe here and there, or
the
a
muscles.
Fingernail.
Yeah, the muscles, the intestines,
the internal organs.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot to work with.
Yeah.
I've always been intrigued with the human body and the organs, and so this is the output.
Would the tapes actually start as an intact tapestry, or are they actually created in these series of 1-inch strips?
Oh, no, there is a whole series of 1-inch tapes that then I composed into this format.
Wow.
By stitching them all, by putting them together.
That's an amazing eye to be able to do that. I mean, to actually get the sense of proportion right.
Well, the aspect, you have these long, narrow tapes that you're using for your cartoon.
Yeah.
And then you just follow that. Yeah, that was a labor of love.
After this exhibition, what is next on your schedule as far as exhibition work?
Oh, I'm doing a big show in New York at the Armory, their big summer antique show.
Uh-huh.
And I sell my own work as well as these Imperial Chinese textiles, so I'll be there with my wares, and that's in May, the first week in May.
Very quickly, in our last minute or two, you've been doing this for a long time. When
I have, yeah.
And when even 20 years ago when you started doing this for artistic, you know, because the change in viewing craft and viewing craft as art has really just developed over the last 20 years or so. Can you maybe tell us how the reaction to your work has changed over those 20-odd years where you've been doing artistic work?
Of course. Because I used to, the commission work I did, it got to a point where it was getting very aggravating because people would, these hotels and banks would get a new designer in, and they'd toss all this old work out that you had spent weeks on or months. And you get cleaning people and various calls of people that have found your work and wanted to know the value and this kind of thing. And I got to the feeling all this effort was being just tossed away. So I thought I wanted to do something more meaningful. And finally, last year, I had something very positive happen where I received an award from, let me make sure I'm going to tell you this correctly, the United States Wingate Fellow Foundation gave me $50,000 to keep pursuing my own work. So that was a pretty special situation, and this took place at the Getty Museum last year. So that's what happened.
Yeah, and you know, your work is very much in demand, major museums asking
museums here and there, yes, and
yeah.
The general public. Yeah, I have a gallery in Paris that handles my work now, and that's been very beneficial. The French still have this love for this traditional work. And
they have some great examples going back about 1,000 years or more.
They do, and it's a real pleasure dealing with these people, so that's a real plus.
All right. Well, we wish you great success and look forward to your work on display at 108 Contemporary. This is the first exhibit at the new space, and it is gorgeous, gorgeous work. It really is, and I hope a lot of people come out and see it. And John Eric Reese, we appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Fiber artist John Eric Reese speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. New exhibition of his work, Tapestries of John Eric Reese, is the inaugural exhibition at 108 Contemporary, formerly the Brady Craft Alliance, in their brand new space in the renovated Matthews Warehouse at 108 East Brady. It opens with a reception tonight in time for the Brady Art Crawl this evening and will be on display through April 21st. For more information, visit 108contemporary.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you miss one of our recent programs, you can listen to them anytime online at publicradiotulsa.org. Just search for Studio Tulsa and you can look at our past shows from the past few months. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.